So I'd like to open with some opening remarks, if I could. On behalf of the Insurance Council of Australia, the Institute of Actuaries of Australia and the Financial Services Council, I'd like to welcome you to this session devoted to examining in detail the implications for general insurers of the APRA's LAGIC proposals. I'd like to express the Insurance Council's appreciation of the open and consultative approach that APRA has taken to the LAGIC review. APRA commenced talking to the industry long before it released its consultation paper last year and showed an early willingness to take on board points from the industry where they were well argued and substantiated. This constructive dialogue has continued through the development of the LAGIC proposals and the response to submissions paper that we were discussing today. This demonstrates APRA's readiness to engage on industry major concerns of complexity, pro-cyclicality and the overall level of the proposed capital requirements. However, as you would expect, in dealing with a review of this scope and significance to the financial integrity of an insurer, there remains quite a few aspects of the proposals that industry would like to see clarified and considered. Without minimising the need to settle questions of detail across the proposal, Insurance Council members have identified four key areas that they would want to engage with APRA on and wants to achieve on how best these outcomes can be done. These areas are, in short, the supervisory adjustment to prescribed capital. Members have questions about how this Pillar 2 adjustment will be triggered and calculated. The operational risk charge. There are concerns about the broad brush nature of this Pillar 1 change. The asset risk charge. The revised modules are less complex than originally proposed, but are still not simple. And finally, the insurance concentration risk charge. Members would like a serious debate about the design of this charge. And we therefore look forward to a constructive discussion today on some of these matters and other related issues. Before we get into the substance of the session today, I'd like to explain some of the practical arrangements, and I've already said there's some difficulty with the overhead projection. During the session, we will ask you again to switch off your mobile phones to silent, if we could, and to SMS your questions to the number. Your questions will show up on a screen here, and I'll endeavour to work through them progressively as you send them through. We also have, as an alternative to SMSing, we have some fixed microphones around the floor, which you are welcome to put your questions verbally on. I would ask, however, when you do, could you please identify who you are and where you are from before doing your question, as we are recording these events. These events will be on the APRA website as well as the PowerPoint presentations that unfortunately are not available for you to see in this session. Now, it's my pleasure to get into the substance of this and to welcome the APRA representatives onto stage. We have Nolene Wolfe and Kate Bible from APRA to get the session underway, and Helen Rao and Samuel Chu will be joining us for the Q&A session to follow immediately after. So, Nolene and Kate, over to you.
Thank you, Rob. In this morning's session, Ian and Helen spent some time outlining the rationale for the insurance review and also provided some detail on the consultation process that's been undertaken to date. They also provided some guidance on target capital and the ICAP, and also a bit of information on how the supervisory intervention and review process would work. The purpose of this session is to really discuss the key proposals for each component of the prescribed capital amount as they relate to general insurers. Now, this is a slide you should have seen before. The components of required capital are outlined in the two leftmost columns of the slide there. Kate and I will address each of these capital charges in turn and outline the key changes relative to the current framework, and we'll also identify the areas where APRA has revised its proposals from the original proposals which were issued in 2010. We'll also try and provide some insights into our thinking for those revisions. We intend to present for about 45 minutes, after which we'll invite Helen and Sam to join us for questions from the floor. Now, there are five key components to the prescribed capital charge. They are asset risk, asset concentration risk, insurance risk, insurance concentration risk, and operational risk. These five components of required capital are then combined together using an aggregation benefit. This aggregation benefit is intended to recognise the fact that asset risks and insurance risks do not necessarily occur at the same time. The operational risk charge and the aggregation benefit are new features of the proposed capital framework. Now, during 2010, APRA outlined its original proposals via a discussion paper and a series of subsequent technical papers. We consulted on the proposals and received feedback from industry via a number of different mechanisms and also via the quantitative impact study that was conducted. Now, 90% of industry participated in the general insurance quiz. We also received in excess of 60 written submissions. Some of the key issues raised by industry are covered in this slide. APRA has listened to the feedback received. We've made a number of changes to the proposals to take into account insurer feedback. We've also shown here a summary of our revised proposals, but we'll be going through that in more detail now. So starting off with the asset risk charge. Now, the purpose of this charge is to recognise the risk of an insurer's capital base changing over time due to market movements or due to default. APRA is proposing that this charge would replace the existing factor-based investment risk charge. The asset risk charge would be determined by subjecting the balance sheet to a series of APRA-defined stresses. Both assets and liabilities would be stressed against movements in real interest rates, inflation, equity, property, credit spreads, currency, and the risk of default. The results of these stress tests would then be aggregated using a correlation matrix. And once again, the correlation matrix recognises the benefits of having a diversified portfolio of assets. Now, consultation showed that industry was quite concerned about the increased complexity of the asset risk charge and the impact it would have on transparency and on compliance costs. Many submissions argued that there was no need to change from the existing factor-based approach on the grounds that the proposed changes were unnecessarily complex, and especially given the conservative investment profile of most general insurers. Now, feedback was also received regarding the design and the magnitude of the specified stresses. And it was also pointed out that some of the stresses were quite pro-cyclical in nature. APRA has considered insurer feedback and has, on balance, decided to retain the concept of a stress-based test to the insurer balance sheet. It is APRA's view that the existing factor-based approach is overly simplistic and doesn't address key asset liability mismatch risks such as duration, currency, and inflation risks. The move to a stress-based approach, whilst being more complex, is on balance considered appropriate given the improvement in risk sensitivity. The stress-based asset risk charge will place a greater emphasis on the linkage between the riskiness of different investment profiles as they relate to the liabilities of the insurer. APRA has, however, made significant refinements to the proposals to take into account insurer feedback. And apologies for this section, it does get rather technical. Firstly, we have simplified the calculation of the real interest rate and the inflation rate stresses. The term-dependent structure of the real interest rate and inflation stresses has been removed, which should substantially reduce the computational effort required to calculate this charge. The real interest rate stresses will now be applied to nominal risk-free rates. And the inflation stress is now defined as a fixed basis point shift. These two effects have the effect of reducing, of avoiding the need to separately project CPI inflation. The real interest rate shock has been capped, and the inflation risk shock is no longer multiplicative in nature. These two items have the effect of reducing the pro-cyclicality of the measure. The magnitude of the real interest rate stresses and the inflation stresses, in particular at the shorter durations, has been reduced, which has the impact of reducing the impact on overall capital. For the credit spreads module, insurer feedback suggested that the stresses applied to state government bonds and to high-quality structured assets, such as mortgage-backed securities, were too harsh. In response, APRA has reduced the stresses applicable to semi-government bonds, semi-government debt, and has set separate stresses for re-securitised assets, and the stresses for structured and securitised assets have been reduced. It was also suggested that the credit spread charges for long duration assets were too high. APRA has addressed this by separating out the jump to default risk from the credit spread risk and reducing the size of the credit spread risk stress. Now, this is an increase in complexity from the original proposals, but it does substantially reduce the impact on long-term assets. Credit spread factors for lower quality assets have also been reduced, and this will have the effect of reducing the pro-cyclical impact of the charges as a result of credit rating downgrades. Stresses for cash deposits and at-call floating rate assets have also been reduced. APRA has further simplified the asset risk module by removing the volatility module. This reflects the quiz outcomes, which showed that volatility risk was not a significant influence in the general insurance overall risk asset charge. Equity volatility will now be considered as part of the equity risk module. Now, in its original proposals, APRA acknowledged that inflation risk for insurance liabilities was potentially double counted in both the asset risk and in the insurance risk modules. And we outlined some options for addressing this double count. The majority of insurer submissions preferred that inflation risk be allowed for in the risk margins and the insurance risk charge rather than in the asset risk charge. Insurers argued that the bulk of insurance liabilities of a general insurance balance sheet are much more heavily influenced by inflationary pressures such as legal cost inflation and medical cost inflation than they are by CPI inflationary pressures. It was argued that inflation risk shouldn't be considered in the asset risk charge, given it's not possible to fully eliminate these types of inflation risks through asset liability mismatching. Now, APRA's considered these arguments, but remains of the view that there are significant advantages in retaining the expected inflation module. An unexpected increase in claims inflation can be a significant risk for a general insurer. Retaining the expected inflation module means that insurers will need to specifically consider these risks of inflation when setting their investment policy. The absence of a fully matched market-based solution is not sufficient reason to ignore the risk. APRA has therefore decided to retain the expected inflation module, but is proposing to reduce the insurance risk charges for long-tail classes to take account of any potential double count. Moving on to the asset concentration risk charge. Now, this charge is intended to address an insurer's exposure to large single losses where investments are concentrated in a particular area. Now, this might be an insurer that has a large investment in a single property, or it might be an insurer that has a large exposure to a single counterparty or group of counterparties. Now, such an insurer is exposed to the risk of a single large loss if either the value of that asset moves substantially or if the counterparty defaults. Now, APRA addresses this risk by requiring a 100% capital charge on any portion of an asset that exceeds the specified limits. The current framework is considered deficient, as there are no asset concentration limits currently applying for investment exposures to highly rated counterparties. APRA is therefore proposing that a base limit of 25% of capital base apply to large investments in an individual asset or for large non-reinsurance exposures to a single counterparty or group of related counterparties. Now, we have specified higher limits which will apply for certain higher quality exposures. So for government exposures, there will be no limit. For exposures to APRA-regulated entities, a limit of 100% of capital base will apply, subject to a restriction that no more than 50% of capital base be allowed in long-term investments. For exposures to APRA-regulated entities, the limit is also proposed to be 100%. Sorry, for exposures to related APRA-regulated entities, the limit is also proposed to be 100%. We've introduced a $20 million minimum threshold as a concession for smaller insurers, and this is intended to recognise the benefits to a smaller insurer of having a strategic relationship with a highly rated counterparty such as a bank. APRA is not proposing any changes to the asset concentration limits for reinsurance exposures. Now, these proposals remain largely unchanged from those proposed in our discussion paper, with the exception of the limits applying for exposures to APRA-regulated entities. Submissions raised concerns that the thresholds proposed for exposures to APRA-regulated entities were too low. Operating exposures to banks are varied and can, for some insurers, be quite seasonal, especially around the annual renewal period or around a time when just before a large claim is being paid. APRA also recognises that for short-term exposures, limited other investment opportunities exist. So for this reason, we have proposed increasing the limit on bank exposures from 50% of capital base to 100% of capital base. However, for long-term investments, the 50% of capital base limit will remain. APRA also received feedback from insurers which are part of a Level 2 or Level 3 group or conglomerate. These insurers argued the relative merits of investing the bulk of their assets with the parent, given the parent is APRA-regulated and therefore very secure. Now, APRA has already applied higher limits of 100% of capital base to these related party exposures. And it's APRA's view that it is imprudent to set limits higher than the level of capital base available to the insurer for losses to one exposure. We may apply some exemptions to asset concentration limits for some corporate captive insurers, but only where the general insurer is only licensed to write the risks of the parent, and only where there are no third-party risks involved, so no workers' comp, no CTP, for example. Exemptions would not be appropriate, however, for a captive insurer with an APRA-regulated parent, as such a parent may have received a reduction in capital base, in regulatory capital, as a result of the cover provided by the captive. Insurers also queried the proposed treatment for letters of credit and other forms of collateral provided by APRA-regulated ADIs to support reinsurance recoveries from non-APRA-authorised recoveries after the second balance date. Now, these large individual collateralised reinsurance recoveries could, if treated as an ADI exposure, potentially lead to an insurer exceeding their ADI asset concentration limits. Now, reinsurance recovery assets have been excluded from the proposed changes to the asset concentration limits. So there's no proposed asset concentration limits for reinsurance recoveries of entities rated grade 1, 2 or 3. The reason we did that was due to the difficulty of designing rules for reinsurance exposures that didn't lead to unintended consequences. It's therefore appropriate to apply a similar principle to any collateralised reinsurance recoveries. So for this reason, APRA is proposing that an insurer can choose whether to treat a collateralised reinsurance recovery as an exposure to the originating reinsurer or as an exposure to the ADI providing the collateral for the purposes of calculating the asset concentration risk charge. Operational risk. An explicit charge for operational risk is a new feature of required capital. APRA has proposed a charge which is a function of insurer size as measured by the gross written premium or the net insurance liabilities, the greater of the two. Now, this is in line with publicly available operational loss data, which indicates that the largest operational risk losses for insurance companies are usually a function of insurer size. In addition to the size variable, APRA is proposing that a loading be applied to the operational risk charge to reflect material changes, both positive and negative, in the size of an insurer. In this case, changes in size are defined based on changes in the gross written premium. This reflects the fact that exposure to operational risk is likely to be higher at times of rapid growth, and that also in times of decreasing business volumes, there might be a time lag before significant operational risk events are discovered. Now, nearly every written submission provided robust feedback on the operational risk charge. Submissions expressed concern that the proposed charge was not sufficiently sensitive to operational risks and that the charge does not explicitly recognise an individual insurer's operational risk performance. It doesn't take account of key factors such as quality of management, internal risk controls, number of employees, experience of employees. A number of submissions suggested that the operational risk charge would be better addressed in Pillar 2 rather than Pillar 1, where the PAIRS and SOARs ratings and other factors could be taken into account. Now, APRA recognises that the operational risk charge that has been proposed is quite simplistic. Operational risk is, however, a key risk for insurers, and APRA believes that it is important that operational risk remain a feature of the Pillar 1 capital charge. APRA is proposing to review insurers' ICAP assessments of operational risk with a view to improving the sensitivity of the operational risk charge over time. Now, insurers also raised specific concerns about the construct of the formula originally proposed. There were elements of the formula originally proposed that led to some unintended consequences, APRA's done our best to address those concerns. For example, the original approach proposed using gross rather than net insurance liabilities. Now, this resulted in potential significant variability in the operational risk charge after the occurrence of a large claim or a catastrophic event. Now, whilst APRA still remains of the belief that there are additional operational risks associated with the reinsured portion of an insurer's portfolio, it does recognise that gross insurance liabilities can be extremely volatile. For this reason, we've decided to use net rather than gross insurance liabilities. APRA still intends to express the charge as a function of gross written premiums, but we think this is okay because reinsurance premiums are somewhat more predictable than reinsurance recoveries might be. Except maybe now. For similar reasons, APRA has also deleted insurance liabilities from the change factor of the formula. And this will further reduce the potential for unnecessary volatility in the charge. Now, some submissions also suggested that lower operational risk charges should apply for insurers experiencing organic growth versus inorganic growth or unplanned growth. Now, it's APRA's view that growth, whether planned or unplanned, does introduce additional operational risk. Whilst it might be possible to mount an argument for lower increases in operational risk for planned growth, it's difficult to imagine a robust definition being defined that might distinguish between these two categories. For these reasons, we've not made any changes to the charge to reflect this. It was also suggested that the operational risk charge should be lower for reinsurers, as operational risks per dollar of premium are likely to be lower, as a reinsurer does not administer individual policies, has fewer claim processing activities and fewer sales and marketing risks. APRA thinks there's merit in this, and they've therefore reduced the factors for reinsurance business. Insurers also pointed out that increases in premium rates and foreign currency fluctuations would lead to increased operational risk charges, despite there being arguably no change in the operational risk of the insurer. APRA has increased its threshold for the change loading from 10% to 20% to better allow for this. I'm now going to hand over to Kate, who will give the remainder of the presentation on the remainder of the risk charges and will also cover level 2.